Welcome back to Overdue. I'm Miss Watts, your Annex Librarian.
And I'm Coach Hill, your main building librarian. In today's episode, we have an interview with a very high-profile friend of the library.
Who's it gonna be?
And we'll also be discussing some specific books available for checkout. But first, let's dust off the cover of some graphic novels.
Today we're digging into graphic novels, which is not a genre, but it is a specific format for authors to use to tell a longer story using visual art. So we're thinking like book-length comics that can tell a collection of short stories or one long narrative. Graphic novels can take the form of manga, which is a Japanese-style comic. And I don't understand how students can read this. It completely messes with my brain. It's read top to bottom and right to left.
Yeah, I'm the same way. But I think they're very popular.
I think it's super impressive that people can actually comprehend
it. For sure. They get checked out a lot.
They do. I don't understand it. It's very impressive. So you've got manga, which is a Japanese-style comic, and then you've got the superhero that can be shorter comic strips that fit into one longer narrative. Authors are using graphic novels to tell their own personal stories or to highlight a topic through nonfiction writing. So lots of different avenues to go with graphic novels.
Yeah. And so when you look at our collection and look at what's popular and what we have available, within that manga category, the Blue Exorcist series is far and away the one that gets checked out the most. And it doesn't take the kids long to run through it. But again, Blue Exorcist, by far the most popular manga series that we have. In terms of non-manga, there's two that really stand out in terms of popularity. One is the Boxers and Saints kind of two-part series, if you want to call it that. And then the other one is My Friend Dahmer, which is about the adolescent life of Jeffrey Dahmer. One thing that we have that I'm currently working on building and that I want to highlight is how many classic novels that we have in graphic novel form.
Which is super cool for students.
Yeah, so just to highlight some here, we have To Kill a Mockingbird, we have Animal Farm, we have some Shakespeare like Romeo and Juliet and Julius Caesar, we have The Giver, we have Animal Farm, we have The Hobbit, and we have a graphic novel form of Walden. So there's a couple, in my mind at least, there's a couple really cool, how do I want to say it? There's a couple really cool uses for these classics in graphic novel form. One is, this might be a personal thing for me, but sometimes you feel like, oh man, I haven't read that book and everyone's read it, and you kind of feel like you've been left out a little bit, right?
All the time.
So maybe you don't want to take the time to read the whole book. You can come grab the graphic novel form. But I think maybe a better use is if you're reading one of these classics in your language arts class, in your English class, and you're maybe struggling a little bit with interpreting the themes, or maybe it's one of the Shakespeare's and you struggle interpreting the Old English. Mm-hmm. Man, getting one of the graphic novels alongside of that and kind of reading them in a parallel way can really help with your comprehension of the classic. Same would be true with Walden. You know, I don't know what that writing style is called, but it's a little atypical from things that we're used to reading.
Absolutely.
And just having that graphic novel companion, you know, with more clear words, fewer words, and pictures, you know, with the artwork to go with it. Because that's obviously one of the main components of graphic novels is the artwork that goes with them.
And even though they're longer books, like they're thick books, they are a very quick read. So if you're reading it alongside the true classic, then it's not a whole lot of extra weight to carry.
For sure.
And it can help tremendously.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about this in a minute, but until last year, I had not actually read a graphic novel. And then I became a librarian and I was like, I should probably read a graphic novel.
Also guilty of that.
And I was surprised at how quickly you're able to take in the information and the words and finish a novel. It's pretty cool. But like I said, you know, our graphic novel collection is something that I am actively working on. Just to start the school year here, I bought around 20 graphic novels. I've got them on display on the new book rack, and that will continue to grow as the school year goes on. Definitely want to keep building to the classics part of that for all the reasons that we talked about. So just keep an eye out. And as always, if there's something specific, whether graphic novel or not, that you'd like to see here in the library, please just let one of us know so we can get it. But why don't you tell us a graphic novel that, since we're both new to them, kind of piqued your interest?
Okay. So I'm the same way I mentioned. I did not read any graphic novels before last year. And so last year I tried to read a few just to connect more with our students because they love them. So one that piqued my interest and that I enjoyed was Bloom by Kevin Panetta and illustrated by Savannah Ganachu.
That's better than I would have said it.
I should have looked that one up. So Bloom, the title is kind of a pun. It deals with a couple of different aspects in the story. First of all, it's centered around this family bakery, which I love all things food. So that's naturally going to make me really happy. It's centered around this family bakery and this high school student who's graduating and just expectations of his parents versus what he wants to do with his life. And then there's this element of romance that's involved as well. So it was a really fun read. And again, it just spoke to me with food and love and all the good things. So cool. What about you, John? What's one you've enjoyed since you've kind of been digging into graphic novels?
Yeah, so, and I'll point out too, we have Bloom available for checkout in both libraries.
Oh, in both. Actually. So if you want to read with a friend, we have two copies.
We do. One in each building, one in each library. So again, being new to graphic novels, I wasn't really sure what to expect. But I think right now graphic novels have become my favorite way of taking in nonfiction.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's quick. You learn something. Not that I don't enjoy quote unquote regular nonfiction. But I think right now graphic novels are my preferred way to just learn a little bit in a short amount of time.
Well, and it's still told kind of like a story form.
Yes.
In a graphic novel, it's the nonfiction, but it's told as a story.
For sure. So with that in mind, something I read last year was They Called Us Enemy by George Takei, who was later in life an actor on Star Trek.
Yes.
But anyways, this book was about his time as a child spent in a Japanese internment camp during the World War II era. And it was, like you said, it was a firsthand account. It was eye-opening. I learned something. And I really appreciate how quickly with the graphic novels you can learn something, you know, in that short amount of time. I know I keep saying it, but that's right now, that's my biggest takeaway with me being new to the whole graphic novels thing is how quickly I can just learn something.
Well, and it comes across strong too. I mean, in that, that visual form,
the artwork,
the shorter text. And even though you're learning something, it comes across really intensely and sticks with you.
Right.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I think it's safe to say for both of us that we'll continue to dive into the,
and if you want to teach either one of us how to read manga, I mean, we could definitely learn something there.
Yes. So speaking of nonfiction aficionados, why don't we move into our next segment where we get to interview a very important friend of the library.
Yes, let's get the security set up. We'll have them in here in just a second.
Stay with us. Okay, so we are thrilled to be joined today with the principal of White House High School, Mrs. Ann Miller, and if you didn't know, soon to be Dr. Ann Miller. I mean,
don't tell anybody that. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
So before we ask you a few questions, we both just want to say thank you. Miss Miller is a strong supporter of both of our libraries. Kind of as much as she can, gives us the freedom to take the two spaces and make them relevant for our students and kind of modernize them and bring them into the 21st century. Mm-hmm. And so we're very appreciative of the support that you give to both of us as librarians and to the two spaces. So thank you.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
And thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule.
You're the first one.
Yeah. I'm excited.
So just to start us off, why don't you tell us about what you're currently reading and whether you like it, and
$5 says it's nonfiction.
Yeah, I'll go. Yeah. I put way more than $5 on the fact that it's nonfiction. Man. But please tell us about the nonfiction book that you're currently reading.
Yes, I'm reading Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink and Leif Babin right now. And it's obviously a leadership book about owning your decisions as a leader. He's a former Navy SEAL, so a lot of war stories, very, very interesting. But the application to leadership is pretty interesting, so I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, so nobody reads nonfiction like Miss Miller reads nonfiction. She just absorbs and digests the information.
And she loves it.
I do.
So there's a super minor character in one of my favorite movies that makes a comment that something like there's so much to learn about the world that, and because of that, you should read nonfiction, and that reading fiction is just a waste of time. So maybe you're onto something.
I don't know. I just enjoy it.
All right. Well, we're going to dive in. This is more of a school related question. What do you think the role of the library should be in a high school?
I think the role of a library in a high school has definitely shifted. So the current role of a library right now that we've talked a lot about, obviously for kids to come and study and learn and research, read, supplement resources for teachers and lessons, teach students how to research, how to find what they need, credible sources, things like that, to just be an extension of the classroom. And obviously just help create ways to stay engaged in reading and growing academically in the digital age. I think that, sometimes people they kind of lose sight of just learning, reading and growing and learning. And I think that the library can be a place that's not boring and quiet anymore, so it keeps them engaged. So that's kind of where I think that the library is going to be most effective.
Kind of a follow-up question to that, are there any more specific or unique roles you see that our specific libraries could fill for White House students and teachers?
Sure. I know we've talked a lot about we're working towards STEM accreditation. Ms. Hall is working with the county to help us become the first STEM accredited high school, I believe, in the state, but definitely in our district. So we've talked a lot about making one of them kind of a STEM extension, a STEM lab to support those classes and all of the STEM pathways. And I also think, you know, the ideas of having game nights and open mic nights and places, a safe place for a kid to go and hang out and just relax, I think is a really cool thing for kids in the world of kind of going all the time. And kids need a place that they can sit and just hang out and be safe. And so I think that that's an important focus for our library here at White House.
Awesome. Cool. So I would say that you do a really good job as principal of giving people tasks to work on, or allowing people to work on tasks that they want to work on, and encouraging them to work hard and to be proud of their work. So I'd like to flip it a little bit and just ask you something that you have done in your career that is your work that you are proud of.
Well, I think honestly, this was my first job right out of college. So I was 21 years old. I interviewed at several places. I'm a Sumner County grad. So I came back and took the job at White House, and I've been here since I was 21 years old. So just the fact of going from being a classroom teacher to an assistant principal to a principal, and being a part of a team and a community, and watching how everybody around me has grown, and just having the opportunity to stay in this community is probably one of the things that I'm most proud of. I tell people all the time, I know I'm biased, but this is an amazing place to work. So I think just watching that continuity and growth is something that I really am proud of, and the growth of our team. I will be proud when I finish my doctoral program. It cannot come fast enough. So,
how quickly are you going to get a nameplate for your desk?
Not quickly at all. Miller. It is not going to be Dr. Miller. It will be resume only. This is an internal goal. It's not to.
I can show you how to change the signature on Outlook if you want to.
Perfect. So, I'll definitely need the tech help. Definitely need the tech help.
Ann Miller, PhD.
Oh, no. But I think we finish, and I want to check with Ms. Hall. I think we're finished in December of 21.
Okay.
So
about a year left. Yeah.
Yes, we're getting close.
Yeah.
We're getting close, so I'm ready.
I bet you are.
I'm ready to be finished.
All right, so I've got the next question. It's clear that you're very passionate about the work you do here. Comes across to our students and our teachers and our families. So the question is, what led you to this career?
Honestly, my mom and dad were both in education. My dad was a teacher and a football coach for the better part of my childhood. My mom was a a teacher before she had kids and decided to be a stay-at-home mom for us. So education's always been valued in our family. I know this sounds kind of cliche, but I just, it's always been what I wanted to do, teaching coach. I was a peer buddy at Beach High School in the special education program. So my undergrad was in special education, and that's really where my passion for teaching came from. Always knew I wanted to coach. So it was never really, I never really had a choice. I mean, a really idea of doing anything else. It was just what I always thought I would do. And so when I went into it, teaching and coaching and then moving into administration, I think that was kind of something that was much more of a calling that I struggled with because I felt like it separated you from the kids a bit. But I just kind of feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be and just kind of working to improve systems for kids. So it's, you are in a way further away from the actual students because you're not in a classroom staring 30 kids in the face every day. But it's also, you get the blessing of seeing 850 kids and 60 teachers kind of do their work and support them. So you see where the stretch can go. So, I mean, it's always just kind of been the running joke in my family is my birthday's in August. And so growing up, my mom used to trick me and buy school supplies for my birthday. And I just thought it was the coolest thing because I would get like cool pencils and cool folders where my sister would get the plain ones. And so mom laughs now, like, I just tricked you and bought your school supplies. So I have like a deep affinity for office supplies too. Nice. But
I think
it's
most
just,
teachers can
yeah,
that, I think.
Like Staples and places like that is
I
like
mean,
my.
I have five hole punches in
yes.
the library, which is a joke between us.
You can never have too many.
I mean, yeah. You were literally just getting on me about how my office supplies weren't readily available.
Yes.
To you.
Like, yeah. Where's the tape, John?
So I think it's just it's in my DNA that I was just supposed to be in education.
I like it. So here's a fun one. Who would play you in a movie about your life?
Oh. Who would I want to play me?
Yes.
Sandra Bullock.
Yes.
Yes. Sandra Bullock. 110%.
I love it. She's fun. She
is.
Be serious.
Yeah.
I like it a
She's
lot.
She's kind of got an edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought Angelina Jolie was a bit of a stretch, so I'll go with Sandra Bullock. I'll go with Sandra Bullock on that one.
We'll get on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to kind of end this segment with hopefully a question we can keep going.
This is an important one.
It is
important
okay.
because it is an important one.
Okay, now I'm nervous.
What's your preference? Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Coffee?
Coffee's definitely my preference, but you know me, I'm a little bit high strung, so if it's after about 11 o'clock, it better be either decaf coffee or I do enjoy hot tea. Now, this is weird. I don't like sweet tea at all, but I love hot tea.
That is very strange.
Do not like anything about sweet tea, not fruit tea. Ugh. But I love hot tea.
Unsweet tea with a slice of lemon.
Oh, heaven. But why? Mm-hmm. There's no point to that.
I just don't like it. I don't know, but I do love hot tea.
Okay.
Yes.
So preference is coffee until a certain point in the day.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Absolutely.
Well, thank you for being
yes.
with us.
This was fun.
Thank
it was
you.
Our first one.
Yes.
Thank you so much for taking
thanks
time.
For having
We're
me. This is
for
fun.
The time and the conversation. So Ms. Miller is a coffee fan, but no matter what you like to drink, come visit us in the library for iced lattes, coffee, or tea. You can see us at the annex or the main building. Now it's time to finish up this episode and take the last sip.
So as we're going to do with every episode, we're going to finish up today by talking about a few specific books that we have in the libraries available for checkout that are relevant to something going on. I think most of the time outside of just our school building.
Absolutely.
And so for this episode, we want to talk about some books that we have that deal with pandemics, because obviously, you know, we're reminded every day, both in school and out of school, of the coronavirus, mm-hmm. of COVID-19. And all the steps that are being taken to try to kind of get through this. You know, we're reminded here every day at school with the hybrid schedule that we're currently on and with students and teachers wearing masks and cleaning surfaces.
Just the different interactions.
Yeah, how real this is and how different this is for us, because it's obviously a very large deviation from normal life.
Right.
And so, you know, considering all the serious steps that are being taken and the necessary serious steps that are being taken, it almost sometimes feels not real.
Absolutely. And it's super weird to think about it from some of our young kids' point of view, where this is just normal. This is becoming a normal thing for them.
Yes.
So to think of it from that mindset, where you walk into some fictional books where their normal is like this. It's just, it's interesting.
Yeah. And we are going to talk about some nonfiction that talks about pandemics.
Mm-hmm.
But because sometimes it almost just doesn't quite seem real. I thought it would be a good opportunity to talk about a few fiction titles that we have that are kind of relevant to what we're talking about. So with that in mind, I'm going to talk about two fiction novels that we have available for checkout. The first one is I Am Legend by Richard Matheson. So in getting ready for this podcast, I was reminded – it's been a, I don't know, maybe 6-7 years since I've read this book. But I was reminded how much I really enjoyed this book. The book has been made into multiple movies. Most recently, in the earlier mid 2000s, it was made into a movie of the same title, starring Will Smith, that you might be familiar with. But the book, the main character of the book is a lone survivor of a pandemic of a kind of zombie slash vampire apocalyptic disease. And the movie generally follows that same kind of storyline. However, I will say that ultimately there is a pretty among the smaller differences between the movie and the book, there's a pretty large difference between the book and the movie. And however cliche it may be, I will say that I much prefer the book over the movie. I think that the path that the book takes, in contrast to the movie, has a lot more meaning to it.
Yeah, and hearing you talk about it, even as we were preparing for the podcast, it's something that I want to pick up and read if a student doesn't snag it first.
Yeah, but, not that the movie doesn't have any meaning, but the book,
it's just different.
It's different, and I just feel like the book just hits you a little bit different, yeah. Because it's, I don't know, it has more meaning to it, in my mm-hmm. opinion. And so I'd encourage you to read that book, whether or not you've seen the movie at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good book. It's been a number of years since I've read it, and just kind of getting ready for us recording here, I was just reminded about how much I really did enjoy reading it. And I had seen the movie prior to reading the book. And I really appreciated that original path that that the book took mm-hmm. in contrast. And I haven't seen the other movies. I've only seen the most recent one, but anyways, that's I Am Legend by Richard Matheson. And I'll also another fiction title, World War Z, by Max Brooks, which was also made into a movie. We have that available here in the library. And that's actually a follow-up to the Zombie Survival Guide, which we also have available here in the library. So World War Z takes place about 10 years after humans won what is known as the Zombie War. And so in the book, there's a zombie plague that is starting to threaten humanity worldwide in the book. Well, just a quick quote from Wikipedia, about the book. It says, Brooks used World War Z to comment on government ineptitude and U.S. isolationism, while also examining survivalism and uncertainty. So one thing that – there's the bell. One thing that I appreciate about this book, or like about this book, you know, aside from that it kind of fits our segment here in talking about plagues and pandemics, is the style that it's written in. It's written as a series of fictitious, is that a word?
Mm-hmm.
Fictitious documents that are narrated by a UN agent. So it kind of has these, you know, make-believe primary sources as you go through the book, kind of painting the picture of what was going on in the world, which I think is a cool way
to
write a book. Yeah. It reminded me of a book that I read last year that we have available, not to do with a plague or pandemic, but it's called American War. An American War was about the second American Civil War. It's a dystopian novel. And it's written more traditionally, like it's a story. But in between chapters, they have these kind of fake primary documents kind of painting a picture of what was going on
mm-hmm.
in that, you know, make-believe, dystopian world. So
that sounds really cool.
Yeah, that was an interesting book, too. So that style is, I don't know, I just think it's pretty cool.
It's different.
Yeah, it's different.
I like it. So those are some fiction titles, but we've also got some nonfiction titles that would give us a look back at previous outbreaks in history. And I can't help but wonder, John, like, what will be the first title about what we're currently going through now? It'll be interesting to see how that comes to life. So the first title is The Hot Zone, the terrifying true story of the origins of the Ebola virus, and it's by Richard Preston. So Stephen King actually is highlighted on the back of the book, and it calls it one of the most horrifying things he's ever read, which Stephen King being like a famous author for horror.
Of just, things that are scary. Yeah.
Yes. It's kind of intense to see that he says that about it. And this is a dramatic account of the Ebola outbreak. And
the next
and that's the other belt. and the secret military team that was assigned to stop it. It's also now a miniseries. Cool. So that's The Hot Zone. Another nonfiction title, and this one has to do with the 1918 flu epidemic. Takes multiple narratives and weaves them together to tell about this outbreak that is one of the deadliest in human history. And it started in a World War I army camp and kind of moved with the troops. And so that one's called The Great Influenza, The Story of the Deadliest Pandemic in History by John Barry. Cool. And it has some stats that like rival AIDS and like other plagues. I mean, mm-hmm. when you look at the numbers, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So that'll be an interesting one to take a look at.
Yeah, feel free. You know, we do have some other titles too, both
yes.
fiction and nonfiction.
Yes,
we just
do.
Didn't want to sit here and talk for 3 hours.
Right. And those are the newest ones that we've added to the
yes.
collection, but we have,
I was
have
actually surprised
more.
That we didn't have I Am Legend. So it's available for checkout. It's just, it's newly available. It's not a new
yeah.
book. It was actually written in the 50s, but, I remember reading it for the first time, like I said, 5, 6, 7 years ago. And I was surprised in getting ready for this, that we actually didn't have it on the shelf. So
that's true. Yeah. But we do have more than that, like you said. So come see us if you're interested in digging into that topic a little more. But right now, it's time for us to check out. Don't forget to follow us at BDP_library on Twitter and Instagram for library updates, news, and giveaways. And tell a friend about us.
That's right. Be sure to check back with us every other Wednesday for the next episode of Overdue. Make time to read. Thanks for listening.